is the Echo Network.
Kelly's Westport Inn presents the Royalman Report with Casey Royalman.
He's an important member of the sports atmosphere in Kansas City.
Michael Engel.
We actually said during the interview that we consider Michael Engel to be our spectrum of our program.
Jeff Herr.
And Chris Kamler, who is the producer of the Royalman Report.
Sorry, Troy.
Music by 49 Stones and Andre and the Giants. And now, the Royalman Report.
Which is this group of Royals fans, like three or four of them, and they are kind of clinically insane.
And welcome in to the Royalman Report. My name is Chris Kamler. You may know me as Fake Ned Yost. You may not. I honestly don't care right now. I'm in a pretty bad place. So, welcome to Friday, another Friday edition of the Royalman Report. And it's kind of a quiet little studio here. It's been kind of a depressing day for me. I don't want to really talk about it, but we are excited to bring in the rest of the Royal Men on the Royal Men Report. Have we changed the names, guys? Maybe we haven't changed the name yet, but we are going to do something a little different today. We are going to attempt to have a kind of a half-live show, half-in-the-can show, where we've got a couple of recorded pieces. We also have several pieces that we do need to talk about. There's a lot going on with our Royals in the last week or so, good things and bad. And so we are going to go ahead and have about a half a live show and then half a recorded show, and we'll put that up here relatively quickly. So I'm going to bring in what looks like Michael Engel. Mr. Engel, hello, sir. Good morning or afternoon or whatever time it is.
Good morning, Kansas City, or good evening.
How's your day going? Probably better than mine.
So far, for various reasons, it's Friday is the main reason, of course. I got a new baseball book. That's reason number two.
Oh, there you go.
We'll keep it there for right now, I guess.
Happy St. Patrick's Day to you. And Troy, what is that on your head, pal?
This is my St. Patty's Day hat and wig that I went ahead and brought back again from Dead Girl Derby this last week. Wore my derby shirt today. It's the only thing I have that really has a lot of green in it. So I decided that was going to be perfect for today. But yes, we do have a big show for you today. Of course, we're joined, as Chris said, we're not in studio. We're actually using a Google Hangout. So one of the good things to come out of Google Plus, the four of us are actually in our respective places. I'm at work. Chris is in the man cave, and then Mike and Jeff are in their respective KU man caves, and hoping that their team has a better turnout tonight than a different local team that we are not allowed to talk about tonight.
We'll get cut off.
Yeah, no, I will turn this thing off, and we will shut it down.
I will turn this thing around, children. But yes, we're happy to be here. We're going to do somewhat of a short show, as Chris said. We're gonna talk a little bit about what's been going on, because there's just too much happening to do a purely pre-recorded show. So we had to get together and do a little bit of a live show. But we are gonna talk to Jeff Montgomery later on recording. And Mike, tell us a little bit about the interview you just got done doing.
Yeah, the other day I talked to John DeJuan, and if you're looking for baseball resumes, this guy has a pretty decent one. He's the owner of Baseball Info, which is where Bill James' work is hosted. He also is the founder of Stats, Inc., which is, everybody's heard of them. And he is the author of The Fielding Bible. And the Bible for me was granted a media request to do a quick about 15 minutes talking about, defensive players and fielding stats. And specifically Eric Hosmer and why the defensive stats kind of rank him lower than stuff. I've heard
Hey Engel, you sound like crap.
Engel, you're cutting out really bad.
Sorry.
You might need to move in on your mic or something. I don't
move
know what
in
you're
on
doing.
Your mic or plug it into the wall or stop leeching off your next door neighbor's internet.
So yes, as Mike was saying, he did have a great interview. He had a great interview. And with John DeJuan, and we'll have that in as well. That'll be in your third segment today. You will have that interview. You'll have the interview with Jeff Montgomery in the second. And, of course, you're listening to us now, so you're in the first segment. So, and then we are also joined, on Hangout here, by Jeff Herr. Jeff, how are you doing today?
I'm fantastic.
fantastic as always. How are you doing?
Well, you know, I'm wearing some green hair and a green hat, so I guess I'm doing all right. I'm getting beat up by haters on both sides of the board on Twitter. You just don't want to talk about KUMU, and especially if you don't have a rooting interest, because they just come out of the woodwork to rip you apart. They take one tweet and run with it.
You're a Nebraska guy. It's kind
yeah,
of
but
like
I don't ever talk about
nobody
that.
Beats up on my brother but me. You know?
Well, whatever. I'm not even beating up. I'm just talking. I'm being a sports pundit. That's what I do. So,
oh,
but anyways. Let's get down to business here. Lots been happening with the Kansas City Royals recently.
I'm just
going
to lay my head down if you guys need me. Just to wake me up.
Okay. Chris, if you're watching on the live show right now, which you can do at RoyalManReport.com, normally on Sundays from 7 to 8 p.m., but, of course, March has been a little screwy. But we will be back to our normal recorded time April 1st, so definitely join us for that live show from 7 to 8 p.m. But on our last show, you were able to hear from Jason Parks. If you haven't checked that out, please do so. An absolutely great show. We're really excited about that show, and it's doing really well, so check that out. But since we last, Sal Perez has had a little bit of an injury, and he's going to be out, they're saying, it looks like 12 to 14 weeks now, so mid-June or early June is going to be the earliest he's back. I'm just going to kind of throw this open to the roundtable. I guess, Chris, you can go first since you're already kind of in a sad mood. How does this news add to that mood?
Oh, it's terrible. It's absolutely awful. And they tried to cushion it a couple of days ago. Well, first of all, this whole thing smells something weird. You don't tear your meniscus by going into a crouch when you're a catcher. You just don't. I don't know. Maybe I'm just in a bad place, but something doesn't sound right. We had JP's golf mom there who actually witnessed what was going on. I know, Engel, you had some of her pictures on your website this week. I don't like the fact that they let him catch the first inning. I don't like the fact that they then said, oh, it's only going to be – he's going to be out a couple of weeks. And now, at about the same time I saw my Tigers lose, I got in the same, like, sports break. I heard it's going to be 14 weeks on the recovery. So it was just a bad set of situation. And that guy is, you know, around for eight years. And I hope he's going to be – I know, Jeff, you – a lot of your tweets and comments this week were about you just hope that he can go back to his normal self 105%.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at it, if we're talking, you know, the life of his contract, 5-8 years, whatever it ends up being, you know, I mean, this surgery is just a little bump in the road. If he has to be out till July, that's fine, so long as he can come back and be 100%. That's all I care about. I mean, you know, obviously we wanted to compete this year. That's not going to help if he's out. But, man, I'd much rather have him back at 100% than I would have him by May.
Yeah, above all, it's better that at least it's a meniscus and it's not an ACL because
oh, that's true.
An ACL, that's game over. That's bigger long-term effects. But, you know, Will Carroll, who's an injury expert on Twitter, mentioned that, you know, it sometimes does depend on the severity of the injury. So this must have been something either chronic or something just really sudden and severe that maybe Sal tried to play through. But, yeah, like you said, Chris, why is he out there if he feels anything at all? I mean, Mike Moustakas has spent the last 3 days off on a beanball to the knee. You know, so if they're going to take that kind of patience and care and get him right, it should extend to everybody else. I don't know. Maybe they all just downplayed it, or maybe he's been hurt for a while.
Now, they said Moustakas was illness. Is that actually his knee that he's out with for 3 days, or has he got the flu or something?
Both.
Well, yeah, Dutton said that it was the knee is fine, and he missed yesterday because of the flu or something like that along with it.
They said he's lost like 7 pounds from this flu. He'd apparently been dealing with that for a little while, but he had felt 100% today, and he actually did play today. He actually replaced Unionaski Betancourt at third base today at one point, and Royals fans everywhere cheered. Even if they weren't listening to the game, they just felt a reason to cheer because Stop Uni had been enforced at least for a day.
Man, I don't even want to talk about that guy.
You know, it's going to be whatever it is. It is what it is, and there's nothing we can do about it. You know, and again, if you wonder why the Royals re-signed Unionaski Betancourt, just go right through our old shows and go call up the one with J.J. Piccolo. he gives a complete breakdown on what the team's thinking. I don't necessarily agree with it, but, you know, JJ is a heck of a lot closer to the pulse of this, or so we got to go with what he's saying on that. And so check out that show if you want more information on why Uni's on this team. In other news, and hopefully this one doesn't lead to another injury of sorts, but Unesky, now I'm all screwed. Ooh. Escobar, yeah, wrong guy altogether. Escobar signed a long-term deal with the Kansas City Royals. Another, the second big deal out of the Royals in the last month, something the Royals had never done before, all of a sudden is becoming commonplace, and it gives you hope that we can get it done with Gordon now. And then obviously you'd hope in a couple of years maybe that maybe Hosmer or Moustakas will do this as well. But this deal is, I believe, you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't have it in front of me, but it's 4 years with two team options because Dayton really loves his two team options. So I believe it's 4 years for $10 million and then a possible 21.5 or $21.7 million total over the course of the life of the contract, which is a great deal. Baseball Prospectus, the guys that wrote, they did a little review on it, and they were kind of down on it, saying that you could probably get a defensive first catcher for a little less than they're paying Escobar. But hey, you know, it gets it in here, and it again establishes that this is the team we're going forward with. Come heck or high water, this is what we have, and hopefully we can get the pitching to surround them out, and this team can compete. Because this team offensively can compete. They just really need the pitching to go with it. So, Jeff, your thoughts on the Escobar signing?
I like it. I mean, I think just kind of echoing what you guys said, it shows the right things from this organization. You know, it's no longer about, you know, flipping guys for other prospects and trying to kind of beat the system. They're like, you know what? At some point, we're going to have to pay somebody, and we're going to have to start somewhere. And they started with Sal Perez. They started with Altidis Escobar. Hopefully the next step is Alex Gordon, and then eventually someone like Eric Hosmer. I mean, I guess it's a pipe dream at this point, but, you know, we can still hope. It's at least a step in the right direction, if nothing else.
Yeah, what they're able to do now also, because they've got Escobar and they've got Perez set up, you know, they know in those two positions what their payroll is going to be in those spots down the line. So they can look at it and kind of project what their payroll might be if they're able to start negotiating with Moustakas and Hosmer. They can go through and, you know, say, hey, we know we're going to be on the books for, you know, $6 million here and $6 million here. And then they can, you know, they can balance it that way. I think it's a good deal. I mean, it's going to be about what the market is for a very good defensive player. And he's somebody who could develop into a better offensive player. I mean, he's not going to get on base more than, you know, 33% of the time. He's not going to hit 20 homers, but he's somebody who could, you know, end up hitting the ball a lot more, and he's got great speed to the, you know, stolen base numbers. So when you add that together plus his glove, I don't see how it's in any way going to be a bad deal.
And
he and Perez, I mean, that's $48 million for about 15 years of possibly elite defense up the middle, which is, I mean, I think any general manager would take that.
And you and I, Mike, were kind of talking about it a little bit on Twitter this week. Not only do you have that, but then you got to remember that in center field we have Lorenzo Cain right now. Who, you know, let's take the offense out of the equation. You know, we don't know what he's going to be at the major league level, but we have a pretty good idea defensively what he's going to be. And with not only him, but then you look possibly coming up the pike, you know, Bubba Starling. Who knows what his you know, future is going to turn out to be. But right now he projects to be a plus defender in center field, and Lorenzo Cain probably already is. So, I mean, you're looking at, you know, for the next 5-8 years, that up the middle, which is where you want to be your strongest, looks to be a strong point at Kansas City in the Royals defense.
Yeah, Cain is awesome. And he's hitting this spring too, which is great.
Well, the funny thing is, you guys mentioned Lorenzo Cain. I just saw a tweet come across. I believe it was from Top Prospect Alert. They're saying that he had his fifth double today, and he's batting something like .480. But going off that and into our pitching staff, we've talked about it on here. It kind of scares us. But Luis Mendoza K'd 7 today over 4.2 innings. He's got his third win of the spring. He's 3-0. He's got a .84 ERA. He's the only pitcher on the staff right now with 10 innings pitched, and he's the only pitcher that has an ERA under 1 of anybody that's given up, of the ones that have given up a run. I guess there's a few that haven't given up a run yet, and like Everett Tiefert has 5 innings, he hasn't given up a run. So there are a few ERAs lower, but as far as the starters go, Luis Mendoza looking really, really good right out of the gate here. Are we still afraid of Luis Mendoza, or are we ready to embrace Luis Mendoza being a starter on this Royals team?
No, I'm not ready. It's 10 innings of spring training. I mean, he's got 1,000 professional innings under his belt where he was never a league average minor league pitcher until last year. And his career ERA in the majors is over 7.5. So, I mean, I don't buy it. If he's still doing this in May, you know, I'll give in a little bit. I was wrong on Melky Cabrera last year, too. So maybe this is maybe Mendoza's my Melky this year.
What do you think, Mike, about Danny Duffy? His numbers in spring have been just kind of, I mean, they've been okay, but I don't think they've been terribly great. Do you think he might have talked his way into a fourth or fifth spot on the rotation simply by his attitude?
I could see that. You know, he's thrown 5 innings this spring, and only one of them has really been bad. He's coming off of that first start where, you know, going by what Bob Dutton and Joel Goldberg were talking about, I mean, he was as dominant as almost anybody they had seen recently. You know, everything was working for him. And that's what he could be. I mean, he's, you know, Parks was talking about him last week where he's not going to be an ace, but he could definitely be a number two kind of pitcher on any playoff team. He can miss bats. He's always had decent control in the minor leagues. Plus, you know, like you said, his attitude is something that could end up putting him in line to get that spot. It's going to be difficult because he does have the options, and they can always put him in Omaha and pull him back up when they need him. Which that actually worries me, especially with Mendoza, because I think that's probably what they're going to end up doing. But you know, if they're even, if his next start out, he has another good showing, I think that makes a very good case for him.
I listened to all of Aaron Crow's appearance yesterday. He pitched 4 innings. I don't have a stat line in front of me, but basically his first 2 innings were phenomenal, all-star caliber, pinpoint control, and then his 3rd and 4th innings were pretty dreadful as far as control goes. He just simply did not have the stamina, it sounded like to me, to pitch that 3rd and 4th inning. How late do they go into spring training with the Aaron Crow experiment?
I don't know. They probably... You know, I don't know. He might get 1 more start, and then they'll start settling on what the roles are going to be. For him, with Crow, I think the problem is going to be he doesn't really have a very good 3rd pitch. So, you know, his troubles started the other day when he was going through the lineup the 2nd time. So he didn't have a 3rd pitch to offer them. Plus, he had, you know, some pitch count things, and, you know, he didn't really start at all last year. I think he could be a guy who could throw 2 innings out of the bullpen at any time and give you very good, you know, 2 very good innings, similar to what he did in the first half. And that's probably what his best role is going to be on this team.
You're talking about Aaron Crow here on the Royal Man Report. As always, join us at royalmanreport.com. We got a live active chat room right there for you. You're talking about Aaron Crow. He did take the loss yesterday. He got credited for 3 innings, 2 hits, 2 runs, both earned, 2 walks, 2 strikeouts, and his ERA on the preseason here is 3.60. So like you said, he's had some ups and downs, but I still think he's a good bullpen guy. I think that's where he needs to stay. I know that's not where he wants to be, but I think we have a good idea of who the starters are right now. Unfortunately for him, he's not going to get a shot. You know, while we're on the subject of starting pitching, we'll stay here for just a minute. We're not going to go too long with this, but we do have to kind of talk about, first off, with Sal Perez being hurt, they're going to have to find another 40-man spot. I'm interested to see if this is a chance for us to finally rid ourselves of a Vin Mazzaro or Sean O'Sullivan off that 40-man to make room for Max Ramirez, but because they're having mediocre springs at best. But more importantly, Joaquin Soria's got a 12 ERA this year. He's off to a very slow start. Zach Minor looks like crap, but he did anyways. Bruce Chen, 9.64 ERA. No way I can defend him anymore. Mike Montgomery already sent to AAA camp. He's going to start out in AAA. Had a real bad spring, a 20 ERA. And Jonathan Sanchez, in three innings of work, has an ERA of 21. Now, granted, those are small sample sizes for pretty much all of those guys, with Chen's being the biggest at about 4.2 innings. Paulino's looking at a 7.2. Again, this is where Mendoza looks to really get that strong shot to start the year. You know, where does this team go with their five? It looks like Luke Ochaver's doing all right. Duffy's right. Mendoza has a real good shot to get in there. You know, who fills it out, I guess, from there? And do we finally get rid of Sean O'Sullivan and Vin Mazzaro?
You know, I think sorry to jump on you there, Chris, but I think with we kind of talked about it with Jason Parks, and I've heard Robert Ford on 610 talk a lot about it too when it comes to spring training and kind of looking at all that stuff. You know, so stats can kind of say something for it, but I think in the end, what we're looking at is you got to kind of look at see what you can pull out from that. And a lot of it we can't pull out because we don't see it in person. But, you know, I heard Danny Duffy in his second start came out and gave up a few hits and did a balk and let a steal go and just did not have a very good first inning. And then he rolls right into the second inning and corrects a lot of the mistakes he was making in the first. So he got hit up for two runs, and that'll look bad on his ZRA because it was only two innings, but he showed some improvement in that start. And I think that, you know, those are the kind of things that you don't necessarily see in the stats that still positives going into the season.
Well, and, you know, on that note, we've also been talking about – I mentioned that Max Ramirez would be the backup catcher at this point if we were starting the season tomorrow. But general manager Dean Morris come out and said they would be open to trading for a catcher. I don't like this idea at all, because even if you're trading for a backup, you still have to go with Brian Pena, or I mean, I don't know who you would go out there and get. You know, there's talk that Ivan Rodriguez is available. Not really a direction I'd want to go either.
Well,
for a year.
Rodriguez isn't going to come here because what he wants is playing time. And I don't think he'd probably get the majority of the playing time
for
12
months.
Years.
Yeah.
Right. And then once, you know, even when Manny Pena comes back, you know, the Royals are going to want to have him involved because, you know, who knows how long he's going to have to play when Sal comes back. Perez is probably not going to play more than four times a week. I think Robert Ford mentioned that on Twitter. Somebody did at some point today that's probably going to be the likely path for him. So, you know, whoever the backup catcher is, yeah, they're going to play, but they're not going to play in front of, you know, they're not going to get Jason Kendall kind of playing time.
So 1102 fan asks in our chat room here on live stream, he asks, can we package a deal for a catcher and a pitcher? Do you see any sort of a trade that you could imagine in your head getting done, or what catchers would you be interested in trading for if we had a chance?
I don't know. I mean, what's probably going to happen is it's going to probably go down to the last couple days of spring when other teams are trying to, you know, clear people through waivers to you know, get them to get their 40-man roster set. That's probably where it's going to happen, where it's going to be some kind of deal for cash, kind of like how we got Matt Traynor. You know, that was just one of those last week of spring training deals where the Rangers didn't have anywhere to put him, and the Royals were interested and went and got him. You know, and it's just not something that I don't think you have to go out and send any kind of, like, significant prospect for any kind of player.
So I'm watching the game on MLB Network last night or the night before, whatever night that was. And there's George Brett sitting on the bench, and there right next to him is Jason Kendall. And
yep.
So, you know, your thoughts automatically go to, should we hire Nancy Kerrig? I mean, Jason Kendall to, you know, take us for another couple of months just on his grit.
You know, the only thing I would say on that is if he can work the pitchers, this pitching staff is going to need a strong catcher. And I like Brian Pena, great guy, one of the nicest guys, I think. It was Dave Darby that said that he was probably his second or third favorite person on the team. You know, but I don't see that guy being able to run this pitching staff the way we need to, and maybe that's something Kendall can do, but no, I do not want Kendall on this team.
No.
Mike, you were going to add to that?
I'm starting helping a friend coach a little league team of 11-year-olds, and I'm pretty sure these 11-year-olds could probably throw out more guys than Jason Kendall could.
I'm pretty sure. Maybe two or three of them wouldn't, but, you know, there's a couple of guys. So, no, I think Jason Kendall's done. I think people know he's done. I don't think he's a worry. I don't know. Greg Schaum was talking about guys he would like to see, and I think he's probably working on a list of potential guys. You know, there's not going to be – I don't think we're going to end up with a very good catcher coming into this. It's probably just going to be Peña and Ramirez is how I'm thinking it's going to shake out.
It was kind of nice, though. Sorry, Jeff, I didn't mean to step on that. It was kind of nice, though, to see – Miguel Olivo give up like 9 pass balls in that game for the Mariners. So that was kinda,
I don't know what everybody. I don't know why everybody was so in love with him. I was always a John Buck guy, and neither of them were very good. But I did not understand the love for Miguel Olivo. And we were kind of having fun on Twitter that day with things Mariners or things Royals fans are used to hearing or something like that. I had some sort of hashtag going, and one of the Mariners fans that followed me changed it into things Mariners fans are used to hearing, and was talking about that one and their first baseman striking out a lot and. Just all sorts of crazy like that. So, yeah, Jeff, go ahead and add what you were going to add.
This is slightly off topic, but, I mean, the whole Perez situation brings up something where everyone has been, you know, the last couple of years, it's been all farm system. The Royals are so great. Well, I think if there's one place that we're lacking in organizational depth, it's catcher. You know what I mean? The only, beyond Sal Perez, the only legitimate catching prospect we have anymore is Cam Gallagher, and, you know, from what I've heard, I don't even know if he'll stay a catcher, and he's probably 4 years away, if anything.
Oh, so, yeah. I mean, he's just out of high school.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's no way he's getting anywhere soon, and he's kind of got a bigger frame, too. I don't think he's probably going to stick. So maybe this will bring up something that the organization will, you know, kind of hit on in the future and try and bring up that depth a little bit.
This is the Royal Man Report. It is Friday night, and we've got kind of a unique we continue to try to push the envelope of technology here. And so what we are attempting to do this evening is have a show via Google Hangout, and then we're going to go to some tape segments here in a few minutes. But before we get back to the Royals chat, I do want to make sure that we invite everybody out to Kelly's Westport Inn next Saturday. Several things going on that day. First of which, we're all going to be drinking a lot of beer or soda. I don't know, Jeff. I don't mean to speak for you, but
I am 21.
Ah, there you go. The forehead doesn't lie. Just count the rings on Jeff's forehead, and you will find out that he is 21 years old. We are going to be holding our fantasy baseball draft starting at 2. At 6 o'clock, we are going to attempt a live show. Until whenever. So if you are around, please try to make it there by 6, and we'll get you on the air. We'll say hi to you. It is the one-year anniversary, one-year birthday of the Royal Man Report, if I understand correctly. Is that right, Troy?
Yeah, and which is, of course, going to be super exciting for all four of us, but especially for Mike and I, since we couldn't believe a year ago that we managed to keep this thing going. So we'll see what happens. Yeah, the plan is the draft from 2 to 6, ending the draft and going right into the live show from about 6:15, 6:30 till about 8 or so. They do have a band that night at 10, so get in before 9 to avoid any sort of a cover charge. But if you don't make it, it's $3 to $5. It's almost nothing, and it'll still be a good time. They'll have good drink specials all night.
And Troy will probably buy you a drink if you get that cover.
Yeah, if you get that cover, just find me, and I'll try to hook you up. I'm going to have some money coming from Kelly's anyways for this, so we'll definitely try to hook you up.
Plus, here's a little secret, and this is just for people that listen to the show. After about 9:30, after about 10 o'clock, I'm going to be on by my 14th rum and coke, so I'm going to get a little sloppy, and that's when I start buying people drinks. Don't hit me up right when you walk in. Wait till I get nice and just blackout drunk.
And bring a girlfriend. Bring a girlfriend that's good looking and make her go ask him, and it doubles or even triples your chances of getting it to happen. Just ask Ty from Soundtrack of the Week.
Very
just
likely so.
Kansas City radio host nearby at the time, or you'll get stuck with it.
Absolutely, I'm absolutely looking forward to looking at my bank statement the next morning and seeing what I paid and going, holy crap, what the hell happened? So,
and I'm driving Chris home, so he is free to drink as much as he wants. It's me that actually has to kind of keep myself under control.
I got the hall pass.
Are we talking about this? You're driving me home as well, Troy.
Right.
We talk about this.
The the Troy Olsen cab totally. Service is going to be well enforced that night.
Yeah, I've got the hall pass that night. We've got it all set up. I've got a key to the front door, and we're all set to go. So it's going to be a huge night. What are we calling it? Uncle Ned's Bad Touch Tour 2, Electric Boogaloo.
If you're on Facebook, you can find it if you type in the Royal Man Report. If you type in Royal Man Report birthday, it'll definitely come up, but it's the Royal Man Report and the March birthdays, because we're being joined by a TweetUp KC, and they're celebrating their March birthdays out there with us. I promised them $50 of a tab, so they're going to come on out with us, and they're bringing about 10 or 15 people as well. So it's going to be a pretty crazy night at Kelly's. Kelly typically gets busy after 10 o'clock anyways when they have their band and stuff, which it's the Magnetics, if you're interested in KC music. Unfortunately, I wish we were doing this on Friday night, actually, because Friday night is our is one of the bands of the show, and I'm going to be an idiot here, and I'm going to miss the name because I'm an idiot. But, Flanagan's Left Hook. It's Left Hook, isn't it?
Right.
Boy, oh boy. They're going to kill me. Anyways, Flanagan's Red Hook is playing Friday night. So if you're out for both days that weekend, definitely check them out on Friday night. Hey, but a little off subject here, and Chris, don't disconnect me. I'm just reading things I find on Twitter.
Oh, God.
But Will Myers just tweeted, I am never picking Missouri in a game again. Chris has been moved.
Those are not fame tears. Those are real, ladies and gentlemen.
No, hey.
Bottle those up. You can get drunk off those.
I've been there.
I'm down here in the studio, right?
Mine tastes like Bucknell.
I'm down here in the studio, right? And I've got the curtain drawn, and behind the curtain of our little studio is my television. And they've only just, we've been on the air, what, 30 minutes? They've showed those Missouri highlights like 12 times. They just keep breaking in. Like, oh, in case you didn't hear, Missouri, worse, whatever, and we're, oh, God.
The only thing that makes me smile more so than the fact that,
easy,
that MU lost.
Easy, I will just hang up on you
no,
so
just,
fast.
Just here, the reason is because you guys will finally know what it feels, so maybe not next time it happens to us, because it will happen to us again, as in KU. Maybe you won't be quite as vitriolic as normal.
I don't know if you can see the screen. There's a little button. I can click on your name and then hit abuse. Report an issue.
My issue is he does not like the same team. And Mizzou fans were, some of the Mizzou fans were saying that, and then some said, well, we won't care anymore because they're not in the same conference. Oh, you're still going to care. Get over yourself. You're still going to care. But anyways, I think it's funny because I got in trouble, like I said, on both sides because I was like, KU fans, be careful. You've seen this movie before, but it was starring you. And people are like, we've never lost to a 15 seed, yada, yada, yada. I'm like,
we've only lost
play.
No, there's only been 5 losses to a 15.
And the thing was, Missouri didn't play bad basketball. You know, let's be real about
this.
We played
bad defense. Missouri
didn't play bad basketball. By the way, if you notice, if you're watching live, 7:34. Every night at 7:34, I don't know why, but the perceptive lights go off at 7:34, and I have to go turn them back on. I don't know why it's set to that, but it's all of a sudden dark in my
sunset.
My lounge here now.
Sunsets at 7:34.
Yeah, 7:34.
What was that, Her? What are you doing? What are you showing me your phone for, Her?
He's
I am hitting the abuse button, pal.
He's showing the time.
According to my atomic clock.
Oh, that you were showing me the tweets or something.
Whatever our clocks are. Maybe it's 7:33, 7:32. I don't know. But anyways, back to baseball here.
Please.
Let's talk a little bit about – so let's say Luis Mendoza gets into the starting rotation, or he doesn't. He's out of options. That's the fact. Danny Duffy's not. So the fear is that they're going to send Duffy down just because he does have an option and allow Mendoza a shot. If they do go ahead and go with Duffy and Mendoza in the starting lineup, then most likely it's Paulino that's the odd man out. He does not want to go back to being a reliever, but it's not his choice because once you sign those contracts, you deal with whatever you get. And he might end up in the bullpen. So that bullpen is very, very crowded this year. You know, Herrera is not going to break with the team, most likely. Verdugo, a friend of the program, he's down in AAA. But these are all guys that could play in some teams' bullpens. We have lousy starting pitching, but we have a pretty solid bullpen. What is exciting about this bullpen to you guys, and what worries you guys? We'll go ahead and go to Jeff first.
Well, I was just going to say, in relation to that, one thing I do have confidence of this year, maybe might be a little misguided, but I do have the confidence that for the first time in a while, the Royals are going to make the decision that's best for the team and not based on who has the options, who has the different contract, who has this, who has that. So if it comes down to Luis Mendoza versus Danny Duffy, and Duffy's earned the spot, then I think they're going to give it to him. I don't think they're going to mess with all that stuff. It's, especially because I think they did that a little bit with Mike Montgomery last year because he played well enough to break camp with the team, and they may have ruined him forever. You know, as far as starting pitching, like there could still be a spot in the bullpen, but he does not seem to be getting any better as far as his problems are. And it all started back there because he got off to a bad start right when he got sent down to AAA. And that could be the issue. So I hope the Royals have learned their lesson, and I think they have. But to your question, Troy, about the bullpen, the thing that excites me most, besides just the sheer number of great pitching that we seem to have that's young, is Kelvin Herrera, just like you were talking about. I mean, the guy was just blowing people away last year, all year, and he has done – I heard he's been looking pretty good in spring training. He's probably not even going to break camp with the team, which is ridiculous, but shows how good they are. And, I mean, just the ceiling and potential of that guy going forward is just going to be special to see.
Yeah, Herrera is awesome. I mean, that guy has three great pitches, and he showed it the other night where, you know, he was getting to 0-2, and he was with no fear, just throwing the fastball, getting a strikeout, throwing a curveball, freezing the guy. I think he's got one of the best arms in the entire organization. It's just a matter of him staying healthy. You know, the bullpen is definitely a strength. You know, Soria, I'm not worried about Soria. Soria, he kind of does this all the time in spring anyway.
He's a real smooth starter.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not worried. He's got enough of a track record. And last year, you know, despite the first 2 months, he wasn't that bad. But you've got Greg Holland. You've got Lewis Coleman. Tim Collins is pitching much better so far than any time last year. He hasn't walked a batter in spring. You know, last year he walked as many as he struck out. There's also, you know, Jonathan Broxton. You know, he's only thrown one official inning, but, man, I mean, he was nails. He was going right at guys. He's hitting 97. His slider looks good.
Cade, too.
Yeah, he struck out two guys. He looked very good. You know, even Jeremy Jeffress is having a great spring so far. Plus, you've got Aaron Crow. Everett Tiefert could be a guy who's pitched very well and pitched well last year. And
Jose Maharis, too, right?
Yeah. Jose Maharis.
Yeah,
Blake Wood. I mean, everybody that could be in this bullpen has pitched well this year, pretty much, with the exception of, Soria. And, you know, as we said, you know, he's got the most experience out of that bullpen, and I'm not worried about him.
Blake Wood could be one of those guys that gets traded along with one person that Dave Darby suggested, maybe one of those guys they try to trade for a catcher is Paulino. So we'll see what happens there. But definitely Blake Wood would be in there. Like you said, I mean, there's a whole list of relievers that have been perfect this preseason, the spring training. Will Smith, who came over in one of those deals that everybody hated.
He won't make the team.
He won't make the team, but he's looking good. He's probably going to go to AAA.
Yep.
You know, Jose Maharis, who we need to be a good left-hander, he's been looking good. Francisly Bueno, who is one of my favorite Twitter jokes, you know. I don't have very much funny, but the other day he was the only left-hander, I believe, in the pen. And I made the remark that Bueno was our only left-hander out of the pen, but that's all good. So that's as much funny. That's as much funny as I get.
Man.
Greg Holland, Jonathan Broxton.
You still got that abuse button, Chris?
Yeah,
right.
I'm gonna hit it.
Chris, before you hit
comedy.
By the
Chris,
way,
before you,
yeah, go ahead, Troy.
I was gonna say before you hit that, let's talk about one certain person in the bullpen that I think you'll have definitely some opinions on, and somebody that they're actually talking about may make the team, which
Tommy.
Blows my mind.
Tommy
Hottovy. With an ERA of 0, he's pitched in 5 games, 1 save, strikeout 4.2 innings pitched. He's given up 5 hits and K'd 5. Tommy Hottovy.
Tommy Hottovy. Not only is he a shot to make the team. Worst case scenario, he starts in AAA and he's the first guy to come out. So best case scenario, he starts on the freaking team, which is outstanding. Everybody at his work here in Kansas City, where my wife works, they're all very, very excited. They're following his every step, and we're just pumped. This is this kid's last shot, and so he is absolutely pouring everything he can into it. He is having a lot of fun at it, but we're just hoping that he, if not make the team, certainly has a strong chance to at least get up here very, very soon. And hey, while you're I don't know if we lost Troy or not, but while we're talking about the bullpen, one of the greatest social media events of all time happened a couple of days ago as Tim Collins or Everett Tieford tweeted out a photograph of him and Tim Collins both occupying Jonathan Broxton's pants. As a larger man myself, I cannot imagine the embarrassment and rage that would have gone through Jonathan Broxton's mind when this picture came out. But this ended up all over everywhere. This ended up on Big League Stew. This ended up on some other websites, and it went super
Big Lead
viral.
Had it.
Big Lead had it, and it's one of the most outstanding pictures in the history of TwitPics. I'll tell you that.
And if you're looking for, we'll reference images from time to time on this show. If you haven't seen them or you're not joining us live at RoyalManReport.com on Sundays from 7 to 8 p.m., you can go to YouTube.com/RoyalManReport. And something that Mike Engel brought up to me this week is our YouTube page is very, very lightly used.
We're being very lazy with the YouTube.
Yeah, we love our downloaders, and we get a lot of you. But so we don't ever think to tell you to go look at the YouTube, too. But the shows are right there. Completely 100% available for you. Chris does a great job with getting those up. So ever since we've moved to the man cave, that's been something we've been excellent about doing. So definitely check those out at youtube.com/RoyalManReport. But, you know, you were talking about that. But the way this team is, the attitude of this team, if Jonathan Broxton gets upset about that, he's not going to make it on this team.
He's on the wrong team.
Because this team, do you not remember what they did to the rookies last year? I mean, they carried pink backpacks, Justin Bieber backpacks, and – you know, and they made him dress up in stuff that even I would probably be embarrassed to wear. You know, there were some great costumes in that group. So I think Broxton probably, I mean, obviously they wouldn't have just grabbed his pants and jumped in him. I don't think, I'm sure they asked him.
I wish they would have, though. I want to see that scene.
I wouldn't even be surprised if he's the guy that took the picture.
Hey, Tim, so. Check this out. You think we could fit in those pants?
That might have been actually how the conversation
Broxton
went.
Broxton might have actually.
You know, I bet Frenchie put him up to it.
Yeah.
That's probably, hey, guys, I got this idea. We did this to Andrew Jones back in 05.
Probably did. Jeff, you had something to add?
What'd you say?
You had something to add?
Oh, no, I was just going to say, and then awesome. Then after this, we'll all go hit the batting cages naked, guys. What do you say?
Let's do it. Come on. Woo!
They sound like they've been drinking with fake Ned Yost. What do you guys think?
Well, I don't know.
Well, don't be too excited about that there, Mike. Yeah. So let's jump off baseball for just a second here, and let's make way for Jeff. Or Jeff, why don't you give us a Chiefs update? There's been a lot going on that front as well.
Yes and no. A lot seemingly going on, but for the start of free agency, to the consternation of many fans, not much going on. They did sign a couple signings that I actually really like. Peyton Hillis. At running back, which running back / fullback, kind of a hybrid guy, H-back type, going to be real good. He's a real versatile guy. He's much better at catching passes out the backfield than LaRon McClain was last year. Him and Jamal Charles should be a good 1-2 punch. They signed Kevin Voss as a tight end, which him and Tony Moiaki should be good as well, you know, as for those two tight end sets that the Chiefs like to run. So those are two good signings. And Eric Winston, last I heard, is still in the in Kansas City. So right now, I mean, he's probably the best free agent offensive lineman still left since Carl Nix got signed. And I would love for the Chiefs to get him. And I mean, if that would happen, then the offseason would be pretty well a success. And there, if you ask me, because then there's only one major hole left, and that would be nose tackle. Out through the draft, hopefully.
Okay, so yes, and so the Chiefs not doing a whole lot, but not, you know, they fell out of the Peyton Manning sweepstakes really early on. Apparently nobody wants to play for Pioli is what I'm getting out of this, and I can't understand how that guy keeps his job, but we'll save that for another day. In other news, I know you mentioned Peyton Hillis will come here. I think that's a great upgrade over Thomas Jones, and it'll give somebody that can beat down that line to open up for Jamal Charles. And I'm excited to see what happens there, but I think this team needs a lot more than we're going to get there. Obviously, if you're joining us on Friday night, then you saw the Mizzou loss, and KU's playing right now, so we don't have a lot to report on the NCAAs. But next week, I'm sure we'll talk quite a bit about the NCAAs. Come on out to the party at Kelly's, and we'll let you talk. We'll let you all give Chris a hard time because he won't have a dump button then. So come on out to
dump your face.
Right. Come on out to Kelly's on the 24th. It's Saturday, a week from St. Paddy's Day. You'll be good and recovered by then. Come out and join us. It's going to be a lot of fun. And we're real excited. I mean, especially myself. I'm just real excited the show's made it a year, and I can't wait to see what we're going to get out of that. But I think this is going to be the point where we take our first break. We're going to, when we come back, you will hear an interview with Mike and I, and mostly Chris, with Jeff Montgomery. It's a great interview. Actually took the clip that you hear in the open about Joel Goldberg having to have Michael Engel in studio or on the phone at 8:10 because he would get to the bottom of it, you know, since he started the thing. But you'll hear more about that with you and more on that. And then immediately following that, we'll go to break. We'll come back with Mike's interview, and then we'll take another break, and we'll come back, and we'll close the show. And so we'll be right back on the other side.
Come to Spit Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is Jamboree night. Bring your crap kick in your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup. No love letters, talking to the wall.
Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends. The best pizza in Kansas City and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn. Tell them the Royal Man Report sent you.
This is Kent Babb, and you're listening to the Royal Man Report.
Welcome back to the Royal Man Report. We are joined, we're excited to be joined by Fox Sports analyst and former Kansas City Royal, Jeff Montgomery. Jeff, thank you for joining us on the Royal Man Report today. We really appreciate it.
Well, I'm happy to make my debut on the Royal Man Report.
And you were on the Hot Stove Show with Michael Engel a couple of weeks ago, and I know Mike got a big kick out of that.
Well, my broadcast partner, Joel Goldberg, he's adamant that we had to have Michael on. He would have the inside scoop.
Adamant, I like that.
Well, I'll take the first question. First of all, you've got a couple of new partners, Rex Hudler and Steve Fizioc. Have you had a chance to talk with them at all, and what are your first impressions?
Well, I know both of those gentlemen. I haven't spoken with them since their hire. Fizioc actually called the first major league game that I pitched in, to my knowledge. He was broadcasting for the Cincinnati Reds in 1987 when I made my debut, and that's when I first met Steve. Got the chance to know him better over the years as we traveled throughout the American League when he was doing broadcast work for the then Anaheim Angels. And Rex Hudler is the player, just one of those guys that I think he knew everyone in both uniforms, everyone in each clubhouse. So he was a very personable guy, and I'm sure that will – you know, that will be part of his, his stick in broadcasting when it comes to the Royals, because even though he's never really had any ties to the Royals, he's very quick at getting to know people.
Yeah, Hudler seems to Hudler's got a little energy to him from the interviews that we've heard.
I don't know if energy is the right word. I think he's off the charts. I mean, he's over the top at times. I think he's exciting. He was that way as a player, never played with him on the team, but just you know, that confidence and that energy and that just that excitement was always present in his game.
So how is that energy going to work with Ryan LeCheever, do you think? Ryan's a little bit wry sometimes.
Yeah, it'll be a very interesting transition, I think. I think it's something that will take a little bit of getting used to. I personally enjoyed Frank White's, you know, analysis of the broadcast, but it'll be a 180-degree change from what we're used to hearing with regards to, you know, with Frank. But the thing I've learned with working, you know, with Ryan and listening to Ryan, he is a real pro. He's a guy that has the ability to do about anything he wants to do as it relates to broadcasting, and I think he'll find a way to make the most out of whatever the games that Rex Hudler is working with him versus the games, the 20 games that I'll be working with him, be totally different, but I'm sure he'll find a way to get the most out of both of us.
Now, Jeff, you were saying that you're going to work some of the games this year. Does that mean you're going to do some play-by-play as well?
I will be doing analyst work in 20 games, probably all road games. I'll do the same pre and post work at home, and then I'll give Rex Hudler a break on about 3 to 4 games a month on the road so that his, you know, his season's got a little bit of a break to it, just similar to what I did with Frank White last year after the unfortunate passing of Paul Splitter.
Yeah, absolutely. Talking, kind of turning our sights to the Royals club, you being the consummate pitcher that you are, what are your first impressions of our new pitching coach, Dave Island?
Well, I played against Dave, and he was one of those guys that, good or bad, really never stood out. Never had a chance to get to know him well. He would kind of go about his business, but he was a guy that was able to maybe get more out of less, and I think that was part of the reason that he was given the opportunity to visit with him on a radio interview about a week and a half ago, and I could tell that he's very excited. He takes a very professional approach to coaching Major League pitchers. I think he's very good, from what I understand, with regards to mechanics and maybe the, you know, the video breakdown and using the video as a very valuable tool, especially coming in with a group of completely new pitchers. But I think one thing I took from our conversation with him was that he is a guy that really likes to let the guy's resume kind of speak for itself.
We were talking about Dave Island, but one of the follow-up questions we had was how that is going to affect some of the pitching rotation issues. Specifically, I guess in my mind, would be Aaron Crow. How do you think that is going to how do you think Dave Island will be involved in that, and what do you think Aaron Crow's chances are of making the rotation this year?
Well, I don't really know what to expect as far as he's concerned. I think one thing that you have to keep in mind is the fact that he was never a successful minor league starting pitcher. He was very successful the first half of last season, you know, in the bullpen, and we would certainly think that his chance of being successful are going to be greater pitching out of the bullpen than at, you know, in the rotation. But you know, when you draft a guy first, you know, as a first pick, you certainly have plans on him being a key part of your pitching staff, and I think probably, you know, as a rotation guy is where the team would ideally like to see that happen. So who knows where that's going to play out, but I think we're just going to sit tight and maybe give Aaron Crow an opportunity to, you know, see what, you know, he's best suited for and what his situation and role with the team, you know, where he fits in there as well. So that remains to be seen, but I'm one who really kind of likes to not toy with things when they're working. And by him being so good as a relief pitcher last year, I hate to see them mess with that. But if they have a need, as a rotation guy, then so be it.
Yeah, very good. And that was one of our big questions about Aaron is, wouldn't he have to earn to learn a completely new pitch and really get stretched out before he does too much?
The thing I saw from him when he was so effective last year was he was dominant with his slider. His slider was a pitch he could throw in the strike zone and get guys out with it. Once he started struggling a little bit, I think maybe he had a little bit of a dead arm situation, probably had pushed himself to a level he had never been to physically, very, very high stress situations he was pitching in. And then once he did that, he was maybe a little afraid to be in the strike zone with that slider. So he was not effectively, you know, in the zone as consistent as he was during the first half of the season when his results were so good.
You know, I think one of the impressions of maybe the bullpen is that you're right, it really isn't broken. Maybe we shouldn't try to tinker around with it. But the opposite could not be more true with the starting pitching rotation. Except the radio I listen to kind of has the five set out already. Do you think that there's a whole lot of jobs up for grabs right now?
Well, I think probably there are three that are inked in. There are probably two that are penciled in. But I think one guy you have to kind of put into that mix is Luis Mendoza, a guy that pitched so well in the PCL last year, PCL Pitcher of the Year. And let's face it, PCL Pitchers of the Year, they don't grow on trees. And he's out of options, so he's got to be in that mix too. But I think Paulino and Duffy are probably the two guys that are penciled in. But I think certainly Mendoza has to be given an opportunity to be one of those guys. And, there may be, a long list of others who could potentially emerge as that fourth and fifth guy.
We talked to Duffy the other night, and it sure seems like he's really kind of got the right mindset. He's got a little bit of a chip on his shoulder, and he's ready to kind of change the general perception of him.
Well, the good thing about Danny Duffy, one, he's young, and two, he has great stuff. He's a guy that has a lot of upside potential. I felt like he learned a lot last season, and I would talk to him a lot during the course of his tenure, that part of the season. And I just saw him mature a lot. He started to figure things out. He started to understand that he doesn't have to strike everybody out. And if he wants to stick around and be around in the sixth, seventh, eighth inning ball games, he's going to learn how to let people get themselves out of time. So, he's young. He's got great stuff, and he has the ability to learn. He wants to learn. But that experience is the key. I think you look back at, three or four young guys in the Royals organization going back in the, early 80s. You had Mark Gubazdaw. You had Danny Jackson, you had Brett Saberhagen, you had David Cohn, you had three or four young guys in the organization that were kind of similar to the Duffy and the Montgomery and some of the young guys that they're projecting out. Give them an opportunity to pitch, they're going to get better. It's just a matter of how much time you have to allow them to do it at the major league level.
We're talking with Jeff Montgomery on the Royal Man Report. Jeff, certainly no stranger to pitching. In a Royals uniform, one of my questions is, do you think this offense is going to be able to score enough runs and have a strong enough defense to maybe offset some of the inconsistencies we may still see in a 2012 pitching rotation?
Well, I think they certainly are improved over what we've seen over the last several years. We saw a team last year that played much, much better defense. They didn't win any more games, but they played a lot better baseball. I think a lot of factors involved there. One, you got Alcides Escobar playing shortstop, and that shortstop position is so, so critically important. I really like the fact that Salvador Perez is going to have the opportunity to be the guy that's going to catch probably 85-90% of the ball games. That defense up the middle starting with the catcher is so, so important. But the thing that was really evident last year is the fact that those guys fed off each other. You saw Frank Coor and Gordon feeding off of what Melky Cabrera was doing. You just saw them all kind of feed off of each other. They all had great years because of it. Obviously, Lorenzo Cain's going to step in and prove himself, at the big league level. But I like the fact that he's surrounded by a couple guys who are coming off really big years, a couple guys who needed to have big years for their, personally for their careers. And I think that's where Lorenzo Cain is now as we speak. He's got to have a big year, to kind of fit in and be one of those guys. But I think they will score more runs, provided they're able to stay as healthy as they were last year.
Well, and one of the super exciting things is obviously the corner infield for the Royals with Hosmer and Moustakas. What do you think these guys' ceiling is for this year?
Well, more than anything, I think it's important that they have a solid season, not just a really good month of September, not just a good up and a good down. I want to see guys have a consistent year where you kind of know what you're going to get. And I hate to say that, this probably is not the year for the Royals to, start printing playoff tickets. But more than anything, the Hosmers and the Moustakas and the Perezes and the young guys, and particularly the guys in the rotation, they really need to, establish the fact that, they are what they are. And it's not going to be a really stretch to say that when you look at the back of their baseball card after this year, you're going to see some very positive numbers. You're going to see some guys who are consistent. You're not going to see the guys who you don't know what you're going to get from not only game to game, but from month to month.
We've got a couple more minutes with Jeff Montgomery here on the Royal Man Report. We're going to ask him two more questions. The first one is, about the time Royals fans start to get excited about the team, the dadgum Detroit Tigers go and sign Prince Fielder. How tough are the Tigers going to be this year?
Certainly on paper, going in, they are the cream of the crop. I don't know that he will be as big of a factor as what Justin Verlander was for them last year. If Verlander is who he was last year, it's going to be tough for anyone to beat those guys. He just has the ability to carry them so far. He's such a stud pitcher to be out there and every fourth or fifth day to go out and do his thing. Prince Fielder certainly is going to win some games for him. He's going to be a guy that's going to put up some numbers. But you don't know what you're going to really get overall when you start mixing guys around in the lineup. You start mixing guys around defensively. What they're going to do to their overall package, it remains to be seen. But on paper, certainly, they are the team to beat.
All right, our final question for Royals star Jeff Montgomery, Royals Hall of Famer Jeff Montgomery. We are going to have Joel Goldberg on our show later in the week. Now, one of the things, we know you guys do quite a bit of pre- and post-game work. What would be one thing that you could tell us about Joel Goldberg that a normal person might not know?
Oh, gosh, Joel Goldberg. What is the most unusual thing about Joel?
Preferably that we could just hang over his head when he's on the show.
You know, he has very, very slippery fingers. He cannot hold on to a phone to save his life. He drops phones. He loses phones. He's just a guy that I hope he doesn't have any situation with his children where they lose their phone and he feels like they need punishment, because he certainly is a guy that has gone through his share of phones.
And that is great. Yeah, we will definitely have to talk to him about that. Are you going to be doing any of the pregame spring training games, or are you just going to start on opening day?
We're actually waiting for our schedule, and the Fox Gurus are meeting this week in Los Angeles, and hopefully we'll get that schedule out on as far as our duties are going to be in the very near future.
We are very excited to hear you guys on the call. And good luck on this season, man. And we really appreciate you sticking with our little technical glitches. We're not like Union Broadcasting, you know. We don't have all the fancy stuff, so we have to, it's all duct tape and baling wire over here. So, but
believe me, we have been there, and we are still there at times.
Jeff, thank you very much for being on the Royal Man Report, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Okay, take care, guys. Thanks a lot.
After a long day, you can only go so far.
Kelly's.
You work hard to make the moment right.
Kelly's.
You grind it out to make that time yours.
Kelly's.
You pound the pavement only to find you're getting closer.
Kelly's.
You find the peak and the peak finds you.
Kelly's.
When you find the time and she finds the time, make it Kelly's.
Kelly's.
Kelly's Westport Inn can cause intimate moments and can also cause members of the opposite sex to appear more or less attractive than they actually are. You should speak to a doctor before attempting Kelly's Westport Inn, as the results might be marriage, children, or a one-night stand. Or it might just involve having some beers with your friends, eating some pizza, and watching the games on TV. I don't know. I talk very fast.
Kelly's Westport Inn. You know when.
Kelly's.
Tell them you came for the Royal Man Report.
People will come, Royal Man. They'll come to the Royal Man Report for reasons they can't even fathom. They'll show up via a Google search, not knowing for sure why they're doing it. They'll arrive at our podcast as innocent as children, longing for audio. Of course we don't mind if you have a listen, you'll say. It's a free download on Stitcher Radio or iTunes or on Kings of Kaufman. They'll click the link without even thinking about it. For it is time they have, and baseball discussion they lack. And they'll sit in their chair, sit at their desk on a perfect afternoon. They'll find they have a download all queued up and ready where they listened last week and cheered for their favorite segments. And they'll listen to the show, and it'll be as if they dipped themselves in magic waters. The insight will be so thick they'll have to brush it away from their faces. People will come, Royal Man. The one constant through all the months, Royal Man, has been baseball and the Royal Man Report. Kansas City has rolled by like an army of steamrollers. It has been erased like a blackboard, rebuilt, and erased again. But the Royal Man Report has marked the time. This podcast, these listeners, it's a part of our past, Royal Man. It reminds us of all that was once good and could be again. Oh, people will come, Royal Man. People will most definitely come.
John DeWan, you're the owner of Baseball Info Solutions, and the reason we're talking today is because the third volume of the Fielding Bible is out now. So what's new in Fielding Bible Volume 3?
Yeah, so the Fielding Bible just came out about a week ago, and it's an updated version. We started the Fielding Bible 6 years ago, and Volume 2 came out 3 years ago. And so what we do, you know, is every 3 years we take our thousands of hours of research that we have done in the intervening time and update what we do for our Major League team clients and update it in the Fielding Bible and make it available to the public. You know, so we're taking all the research that we've done and updating it. So these last 3 years, we have focused on a number of different areas, and all of them are having a very important role in advancing the analytics of defense in baseball. So just to give you one example, in this book, we have really taken some major strides in measuring defense on the part of catchers. That's something that has been very difficult to measure over time, and we feel like we finally are getting a very good handle on catchers defensively. So, for example, Yadier Molina, over the last 3 years, has saved 25 runs with his defense compared to an average catcher. And then you compare him to a below-average catcher like Jorge Posada with the Yankees, who only played one game last year, but over the last 3 years has cost the Yankees 27 runs. So comparing Molina and Posada against each other, you got a 50-run difference based on their defense, and that's using the 10 runs is equal to one win rule of thumb. That's five wins just due to a catcher defense alone.
That's a pretty big gap between two players. Now, when you're putting out the Fielding Bible in these 3 year increments, that's mostly due to the sample size for the statistics, right? That's kind of the accepted idea that 3 years is kind of the minimum that you want to have for reliable defensive stats?
Well, that would be the logical explanation of why we do it every 3 years, but I'll give you the real reason. It's too much work.
So much stuff.
It's a lot of work to consider doing it every year. And but it's interesting you mentioned the sample size. We have found, this is another kind of a breakthrough that we found, one of the important things in measuring a statistic is to see that it is consistent from year to year. You know, that players who you expect to be good from year to year in a given statistic, you know, are. So, you know, if a guy is consistently a 300 hitter, you know that you can expect that that's the case. Or if a guy, you know, consistently has a good ERA, generally you know that's predictable. And what we found now is that we can say the same thing about defensive runs, the statistic we use to measure defense. So there's a mathematical concept called the correlation coefficient. And for batting average, the correlation, when we measured players against, you know, player consistency, we found the correlation coefficient for batting average is 0.56. For ERA, it's 0.51. Both of those are good correlation coefficients. It's got to be a number. Anything between 0 and 1 is a positive correlation. So the closer you get to 1, the better it is. Defensive run saved, 0.59. So, you know, we have found that, you know, we're able to say that our defensive runs are consistent from year to year. Even though you're right, a 3-year sample size gives you a better idea. But we have found that even from on a one-year to one-year basis, there is some very good consistency in the statistics.
And one of the questions questions that, that I was wondering is, how do you reconcile some of the differences when, say, a scouting report suggests that a player is very good defensively, and then, you know, with some of the metrics, it doesn't match up? The example that I have in mind is Eric Hosmer, who in the scouting reports prior to his drafting, you know, that he was suggested to be a good defender coming up through the minors. That idea was kind of there as well. And then last year he was, I believe, was like 19 runs below average at first base. Is that a sample size thing, or is that just what kind of factors can go into that?
Well, we had him at 9 runs below average last year. That is possible. In the Fielding Bible Volume 3, we've updated and restated all numbers, all of our defensive numbers based on our newest techniques. So, for example, we've incorporated a timer into our analytics where we are keeping track of how many seconds a ball is in the air, or how many seconds it takes for a grounder to reach the fielder or reach the edge of the infield grass. And using the timer, we're actually getting more objective information, more precise information. So some of our numbers have changed that we used to report, and we've restated them. So if you saw something like 19 for Hosmer, well, he's now showing us having lost 9 runs defensively. So back to your original question, how would I evaluate that? Eric Hosmer comes along, and he has a great defensive reputation, and he puts up a bad year. Well, think of an offensive player. Think of A-Rod. Mm-hmm. What was he like his first year or two in the majors? He came in with a tremendous reputation as an offensive player, and he was really very, very poor in his first couple of years. And it took him, you know, 2-3 years to really blossom, and then he really blossomed. So I think it's very possible for that to happen with the player, especially a young player defensively, that, you know, you have the basic tools, but you haven't gotten it together at the major league level yet. So, you know, you mentioned the 3-year sample size, and it is true, I think, that that you get a better idea over the course of 3 years, and that in any 1 year, as with hitting, as with pitching, a player can have a breakout year offensively or a subpar year offensively or pitching-wise, and usually those are the anomalies. And when you look at their entire, you know, last three-year sample size or 5 years or whatever period of time, their history, you can pretty well predict that they're going to come back to their own norms that they have set. A young player, I'm going to rely more on the scouts. You know, offensively, we're probably capturing 85-90% of the value of the player with our analytics, you know, with things like OPS, runs created, and wins above replacement, and things like that. And pitching, we're probably a little less than that, you know, 80-85%, 75-80%. With ERA or opponent ERA or FIP and all these different ways that we measure pitching performance. And I think defensively, we're getting to that 60 to 70%. We're not quite to the other stats yet, but we've made good progress. But there's still, you know, you're saying you can measure 60% analytically, you can measure it with the numbers. There's still 40% that you're not measuring. And still 40% that you've got to rely on things that you see, that you observe about a player that you're not necessarily keeping track of. And, you know, we're trying to keep track of everything, and we've made tremendous progress. We were probably at the 10% level when we only had fielding percentage. But now we're, you know, at the 60 to 70% level. And for a young player, I'm still going to be more interested in the scouting reports than, you know, than a small sample size of a half year or even like in Eric Hosmer's case, most of the year. So that's gonna come into play. So we don't project Eric Hosmer to lose, you know, 9 runs next year. We still have him losing 6 runs, but it is not entirely impossible that, you know, his defensive ability that he displayed
when the scouts have watched him as he played in the lower levels of professional baseball, that's going to begin to flourish. So 3 years of data is probably your best way to look at the data.
Right, and it seems like, you know, as you were saying, we've got a lot of pitching stats that can demonstrate what skills are and batting skills are out there, but defensive skills are sometimes harder to pinpoint. You know, you can't necessarily put a number on someone's range all the time or the reaction time and positioning and things like that. Are there simple ways coming that demonstrate a player's skill, some of those core skills?
Well, let me tell you, there is something that we began tracking. It's a thing that Bill invented. We call it good plays and misplays. And we have 54 different categories of misplays and 28 categories of good plays. Things like keeping track of for an outfield, mishandling a ball after a safe hit, wasting a throw after a hit or an error, allowing the runner to take an extra base, hesitating before throwing, missing the cutoff, overrunning the play. All these things, these types of misplays that aren't, that many times or oftentimes are not called errors, but they allow runners to take an extra base. And you know, so we're measuring all these things. And good plays, such as, you know, holding a guy to a single for an outfielder, you know, making a good play to get to the ball, and it looked like it might be a double, but he holds him to a single. Or a catcher blocking those pitches that are in the dirt, preventing extra, you know, pass balls or wild pitches. That's a place where Yadier Molina really excels. And so we've converted all those different categories of misplays and good plays into runs. And we are now coming up with a run impact of all those misplays and good plays. And it's really shown to be a very significant portion of the defensive analytic equation. Just to give you one example. Handling throws by a first baseman, handling difficult throws by a first baseman. You know, a shortstop makes a play, you know, whips the ball to first base, and it's in the dirt. And here's the first baseman scooping out of the dirt. Well, you know, we keep track of all those plays, and we keep track of the times when he makes those plays and when he doesn't make those plays. And based on all those things, we can tell you that the best first baseman handling difficult throws, throws in the dirt, or wide throws, are Albert Pujols, Casey Kochman, and Todd Helton. And the worst are Derek Jones, Adam Dunn, and Billy Butler, who all three of them, they avoid playing at first base because they're so poor at these kinds of things. And Albert Pujols, Kochman, and Helton saved five runs and four runs, respectively, over the last 3 years on those types of plays for their teams, while Jones, Dunn, and Butler cost their team 6, 5, and 4 runs, respectively, for the, you know, and their inability to make those types of plays. So, you know, we're starting to measure things that have never been measured before, converting those into the common currency of baseball, runs saved, and we, or runs, and we call it runs saved defensively, are starting to get a pretty good handle on defensive baseball.
So often the eye test is what people go off for defense, but when you can actually assign a number to it and determine, you know, going play by play on what, a situation is for that run value, I think that, you know, really puts a whole different side of it that hopefully, like you said, it's part of just the casual fan's vocabulary at some point where, you know, you can measure it and people will talk about it during broadcasts. For me, as much information as I can find, I'm going to be happy with that. Certainly, you know, things like Fielding the Bible 3 are definitely great resources for that. It sounds like it keeps you really busy, but tough to not enjoy it.
It's right. That's right. It's you know, it's a labor of love, and you know, fortunately, we're doing well enough that we have a number of major league teams as clients and help us pay the bills, and able to come out with the book every 3 years and share, you know, what we've learned. Let me just comment on the eye test example that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of times players are not so much with fans and coaches and managers will often get an impression of a player that he's very good at a certain skill or just very good overall because they're making a lot of very good plays. And one of the things that we found and we are now able to pinpoint better is, you know, the fact that, yeah, there are players who make a lot of good plays, but sometimes the plays that they don't make are getting overlooked. So let me give you one example. Robinson Cano, it's an article in the book. It's called Robinson Cano and Double Plays. And Robinson Cano has a tremendous reputation about how good he is at turning a double play. And sure enough, we keep track of we have a good fielding play type 12, quick double play pivot. And Robinson Cano has done that 28 times over the last 3 years, and that's the most in baseball. So, you know, when he's turning the double play and you say, hey, Robinson Cano is great at turning the double play, well, here's proof he's great at it. He's done it 28 times, more than any other second baseman in baseball. There's another play, good fielding play number 11, is started double play quickly. And sure enough, Robinson Cano is also the best at starting double plays in all of baseball. So he did that 17 times in the last 3 years, that's the highest figure in all of baseball. But there's the opposite side of that, and those are our misplays. And we have the exact same categories of misplays. And so we have losing the double play, the lead man, is our defensive misplay number 6, and Cano did that 10 times. He lost the double play as the lead man, and that was the most in baseball. So he had the most misplays in that category. And then losing the double play as a pivot man, he had the second most in baseball with 9 times. So, you know, he's making all the good plays, doing what looks to be a magician flip, right? Getting that ball out of his glove into his throwing hand to get it so quickly to first. But sometimes he does that magician flip so quick that he drops the ball or it falls out of his glove or you know, and he has a misplay. So it turns out when you add up all the good plays and you look at their run value and you add up all these misplays and you look at their run value, it turns out it's pretty much break even. In fact, it's a little bit below average. We added up all the runs and we found that all those good plays and misplays came out to minus 0.7 runs. So very close to zero, which is average. But, you know, not as good as Dustin Pedroia, for example, who saved 4 runs with his good plays and misplays on double plays over the last 3 years, or Chase Utley, who saved 3.5, or Brandon Phillips, who saved 3.26. But better than Aaron Hill, who cost his team 4 runs, and Mike Vilas, who cost his team 3.6 runs. So the eyes can be deceiving. The eyes are definitely helpful, but they can be deceiving. And in the case of Robinson Cano, you see all these wonderful double plays that he starts or he turns, and you're forgetting the times that he makes the misplay or makes an error on the play. So that's one of the breakthroughs we've had in the Fielding Bible Volume 3.
The Fielding Bible 3, and John DeWan, thanks for talking about all this stuff and stats and everything, and we'll let you go off and get a break from talking about all this now.
All right. Yeah, it's been a long couple of days. We've had a lot of fun driving between parks here and interviewing with so many different people. It's good to see all the interest in defense and baseball.
If you've missed the Rambling Morons podcast lately, you've missed this.
I got all this talent and I can't make it work.
Hey, you need to follow me on Twitter.
I just did.
You did?
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
Hey, Nick, you're a big-nosed idiot. You know what I mean? You got to be able to handle it. So.
I mean, you are a big-nosed idiot. Well,
fair enough.
Like, alcohol is so much.
Are you
much
stoned right now?
No.
Okay. Kevin Keatsman.
Great at what he does, man. I shouldn't say this because it'll piss people off. Or I should say this because it'll get people going.
Soren Petro.
Hypocrite.
Bob Fesco.
Yeah.
You want to talk about a diva.
Oh,
this guy
great.
Bitches from the second he walks in until the second he leaves.
I do not.
I'm honestly surprised he doesn't wear makeup on the show.
My job is not an easy job, but it's not a hard job either, but it's a simple job.
I've met Danny. He could not possibly get a job on his own.
Catch the entire interview with Nick Wright only at ramblingmorons.com.
Tournament. Two of them are still playing. Great. Welcome to the NCAAs. We've been talking about the Royals, which is going to be now my main focus for the rest of my life since I've pretty much sworn off all other sports whatsoever. Troy, what have we been talking about so far, and what have we got left to talk about?
Well, if you've joined us, you obviously you've heard our great interview with Jeff Montgomery. Mike did some great work. This week as well, and I'm sorry, I forget the gentleman's name. Mike, throw that to me again.
John DeWan.
Yes, John DeWan of Stats.com, correct? And what's the name of the book, of his book?
Stats, Inc. The book is, I just had it. The book is Fielding Bible, Volume 3.
Yes, so definitely a good interview. Great job on that one, Mike. A nice pull out of nowhere this week. It's just kind of, sometimes they just kind of fall into
in the lap, yeah.
And that's not the first time that's happened. Hey, one thing a little off note, if you've got a minute this week, follow us on Twitter, obviously, at Royal Man Report, but also follow our individual accounts, Casey Royal Man, Michael Engel, M-I-C-H-A-E-L-E-N-G-E-L, and the Jeff Report, and at The Fake Ned. Follow all those accounts.
Kings of Kaufman.
Yes, I'm sorry, I forgot that one. And Kings of Kaufman, but I was going to say that because we're going to be tweeting this week, I'm sure at some point, about the Soundtrack of the Week UAP Twitter bracket. Some Echo Network love in there. Lori Jen is in the Bitches bracket because, again, we don't name these. We're just in them. Chris is in the Drunks bracket. I'm in the Ball Boys bracket. And we don't have anybody in the Comedians bracket, so we don't
really
care.
Michael and I are actually in the IP.
Yeah, apparently. But our good friend AJ Kohlfeldt of what's their podcast now?
I don't know. It starts Monday. Their new podcast starts Monday. We'll tweet that out too. It was one name and now it's another name, and it's a dumb name, but it's still gonna be a good podcast.
It's gonna be a good show, and it'll probably end up on our network at some point. So definitely check them out, but definitely be watching for those tweets because we're going to need your votes. The Fake Net is going up against Gothlaw, and Gothlaw has a pretty good Twitter following, so we need him to win that one. Lori Jen, she has a showdown with her best friend Mirror Death, so we hope that she can come out on top of that one. And then I've got Paradigm Shift 35, who I've never heard of, but he was an 8 seed. He upset Get Nick Wright, who was a 16 seed for some reason. I don't know how or why Jay did the seeding the way he did. But Chris and I are 5 seeds. Lori's a 4 seed. So we'd really like to come out of our brackets and win. So give us your votes. But that's neither here nor there. Again, I hope you enjoyed the show. We're here every Sunday from 7 to 8 p.m., except for in the month of March, apparently, because of Chris's schedule. But definitely check us out next weekend live in person. There won't be a live show on the internet. It'll be in person.